Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I'm a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School with my colleague, Brendan Berry, also a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School. Both of us work at the Tampa Bay campus, and this is the Constitution as we find a way to work it into our conversations today. We have to start the show by saying that what Brendan and I say are our own opinions. They are not necessarily the opinions of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School or its faculty in general. So therefore, we have made our disclaimer and they're off the hook. So good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you. I think everybody else can too.
Okay, good.
I think you're doing
fine.
I don't
know. My phone is acting up, so I just wanted to check.
Okay, no, we got you.
But, all right, yeah. I'm doing fine, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. It's a beautiful Central Florida day. It's 73 degrees outside. The sun is shining. It's just one of those days where, you know, after 12 o'clock, you hide in your house until after sundown because it'll be in the 90s today, but it's kind of a beautiful morning. We start our show every week with a segment that we call What Do You Really Think? So today I'm going to start out with a simple sentence. And that is, I want you to believe, and I hope that you believe, that some might disagree, that I am a rational Jewish person. Okay? I want you to start with that premise, because the topic of my conversation is nonetheless the laziest member of Congress, the queen of misinformation, the Cruella of racism, the Maleficent of anti-Semitism, the Martha Garibaldi of anti-constitutionalism, a woman so filled with hate and xenophobia that I think she drinks brake fluid for her morning coffee substitute. She is the high-octane purveyor of the big lie. And for all our Christian listeners, I believe to be the spawn of the Antichrist. Her name is Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think you've heard of her. Yeah. It's hard not to hear of someone who purveys such outlandish thought processes that rival Mein Kampf. Later on, I will discuss the cowardice of the Republican Party as it relates to her. But I want to start out with the fact that last week on the floor of the House of Representatives, Marjorie Taylor Greene said the following. You know, we can, and I'm quoting, you know, we can look back at a time in history where people were told to wear a gold star. And they were definitely treated like second-class citizens. They weren't even treated like citizens, period. So much so that they were put in trains and taken to gas chambers in Nazi Germany. And this is exactly the type of abuse that Nancy Pelosi is talking about. And the abuse that she's talking about is that it should be that she is abusing members of Nancy Pelosi is abusing members of Congress by requiring that they wear face masks if they have not been, even if they have been, I think, given a vaccine on the floor of the House of Representatives. Now, in other words, she was equating mask mandates to markings of religious identification for discriminatory purposes, marking people for death. I don't know how anyone, I don't know who you are unless you are so deeply anti-Semitic that you believe that Adolf Hitler was right, that you can sit there and tolerate this. I look at the people in her district in Georgia and say, is this what you really think? Is this really what you want your congressperson to say and to believe? That that's what you want her to do, that you want to return her to Congress, that you don't even want to start a recall of her from Congress, that you don't put up signs and demonstrate against her within your own district. Are you that silent? Are you that afraid? Or is this what you really believe? There is no in-between. There is tolerating or not tolerating conduct like this. To accuse Nancy Pelosi of being someone who doesn't care about people's safety, you who promoted, you who have tried to minimize, you who believe that the insurrection of January 6th was justified, have the nerve to call somebody else a danger to the public safety. Someone who says we have a responsibility to make sure that the House of Representatives chamber is not a petri dish because of the selfishness of some not to be vaccinated. That's what Nancy Pelosi says. This is evil lunacy. This is not me saying this. This is Liz Cheney. Absolute sickness. This is not me speaking. This is Adam Kinzinger. Both of them Republicans. Democratic Representatives Bill Pascrell of New Jersey and David Cicilline of Rhode Island tweeted, as anti-Semitic violence rises, it is disgusting that a Republican member of Congress is comparing mask requirements to the Holocaust, describing Green as a troubled person who is unfit to serve in Congress. I don't want people saying that she's crazy. I don't want people saying that she is mentally unbalanced. I don't want her to have the excuse when something bad happens of saying, I'm insane. See, all these other people think I'm insane. She is as sane as you and I. Racism is not a mental illness. And no one should describe it as such. It is evil. It is psychopathic. When Pelosi says she's mentally ill, I want her to take it back. Green is not mentally ill. And even when she was challenged on all of this, she doubled down the next day by saying any rational person didn't like what happened in Nazi Germany, and any rational Jewish person doesn't like what's happening with overbearing debt masks, mandates and overbearing vaccine policies. Speak for yourself, ma'am. I am a rational Jewish person. I am offended by you. You have no right to speak for me or any other member of the Jewish religion. Speak for yourself. You don't know, because I don't think you even know any Jewish people. You remind me of my roommate at Culver Military Academy when I was 14 years old. His name was Booth Harris, and he was from some small town in Texas, Bowie, Texas. And one day I came back to my room, and my sheets were torn out, and everything in my locker was on the bed, and the room had literally been ransacked. And he's sitting there doing his homework, and I said, did you do this? He said, yeah. I said, why did you do this? He says, I'm looking for your file and your clippers, because all Jews have horns and a tail, and you have to be cutting your tail off and filing down your horns. I'm not proud of it, but the Jewish member of the student body who lived in the room next door to me, and I won't use his name, beat the ever-living hell out of him and hung him out a third-story window in a laundry bag. Of course, I was asked not to rematriculate the next year. And I didn't care. I am a rational Jewish person, and you are a danger to this entire country. You don't make me feel uncomfortable. You make me angry. And the people of Georgia who live in her district have got to turn her out. Either that or you, too, are a Nazi sympathizer. And I'm betting many of you had relatives who died in World War II fighting just that thought process. You are a disgrace if you let her stay. That entire district, you are a disgrace to the country. And if you don't like our Constitution, remember the words, America, love it or leave it. If you don't like our Constitution, you don't like our form of government, go someplace else. And leave the rest of us alone. And that's what I really think.
Yeah. The only thing I can add to that is it's time. Well, it's well past time. But we've absolutely reached the point where any self-identifying Republican has to own this. This is. This is not a glitch. It's a feature, and the madness that has overcome one of America's major political parties is indeed the greatest danger, I think, to American democracy. But, certainly in our lifetimes. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right. Okay. There's somebody else who I think is part of the problem today, and that is Liz Cheney. I want to talk about her for a minute. She had an interview with Jonathan Swan that was publicized yesterday, in which she refused to acknowledge any linkage between the rash of Republican proposals to limit, restrict voting. I mean, how un-American can you possibly get, right, to say, well, we're on a mission here to make it as hard to vote as possible. Liz Cheney, refused to recognize any linkage between that effort, that nationwide effort to stymie voting, and the big lie that caused, or that at least contributed to, the January 6th insurrection. She thinks that these efforts all over the country to disenfranchise people is just fine. This kind of doublespeak and evasive talk when she was asked and confronted about it, you know, how could you say that Donald Trump's lie, right, that he won the election, that the constant drumbeat, the repeating of that lie by other Republicans, the emerging and now solidifying belief among at least 70% of Republicans that Donald Trump, the election was stolen from him, that none of that has anything to do with these Republican efforts around the country now to shut down voting. And she's, she says, well, you just have to look state by state. You know, every state has its own reasons and every state has its own mechanisms. And again, she was confronted. Are you serious? Can you really sit here and say that there's no linkage here? And she said, she evaded. So apparently what Liz Cheney wants to do is silo what happened on January 6th, right? And she doesn't want to confront anything that led up to it, or anything that has happened since. And the reason is that she is a part of the problem. She is a part of what led up to January 6th, and now she is participating in what's happening as a result of January 6th and the big lie. And you can't do that. Events have inputs and outputs, right? There are things that cause an event to happen, and then there are things that happen after the event because of the event happening, and its aftermath and the factors that played into it. This monster, the present-day Republican Party, is something that has been growing, something that has been fed by people who now want to walk away from what they have, the Frankenstein that they helped to create. If you have been feeding on ignorance for decades, if you have been promoting ignorance for decades, if you have been asking people for decades not to think for themselves, if you have been for decades fighting against science, fighting against history, fighting against against evidence and facts and reason, then you cannot say, you know, in shock when January 6th happens, oh, well, that was just too much. But apparently January 6th was an inconvenience for Liz Cheney. And she was mad about it, right, because she was in danger and she was put out of the chamber where she was sitting. So that's just too much for her. But everything that led up to it is fine. And now the effort, right, to undermine democracy, to put it lightly, with all of these new voting restrictions, that's fine with her too. So when I say that Republicans need to own this, I'm talking about her too. You own, if you're okay with everything that led into it, and you're okay with the big lie as it relates to voter suppression, because that'll help you stay in power, then you own it. You own Marjorie Taylor Greene. You own January 6th. You own the mindless behemoth, right? That is the party that you now associate yourself with. And so I'm as you can probably tell, I'm at the limit of people saying, well, you know, of Republicans saying, you know, well, it's the Trumpsters, and it's you know, maybe January 6th was too much, maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? Maybe she's too much. No, it's all too much. And I would conclude by saying, yes, that's a threat to democracy. So that's what I think.
Well, it's interesting. For those who remember Justin Amash, the congressman from Michigan, former congressman now, he broke with Trump very early, and he was interviewed on Axelrod's Axe Files on his podcast. And he said things like, we had 4 years where she, referring to Cheney, could have stood up and said, there's a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
What Donald Trump is doing is wrong. I think this effort to turn her into some sort of hero, meaning Cheney, is a bit misguided. One of the biggest problems we have, and I'm still quoting Amash, one of the biggest problems we have in politics is that when someone is inconsistent like that, where they're doing the wrong thing for 4 years and then flip on a dime, there's a tendency to turn them into heroes. I think that's a huge problem because it lets people get away with things. Amash noted that the issue can be tricky as people must be allowed the opportunity to change. Cheney may have flipped on Trump, but her commitment to the anti-democratic ideals that put him in office in the first place is as rock solid as it ever was.
Mm-hmm.
All she had to do was say those things 3 weeks ago, and she would still be in the leadership of the Republican Party. Because that is the Republican, that is the only issue Republicans have to try to sell fear in the 2022 elections. There is no other fear they can sell. People are going back to work. Wages are going up. Things are being done on the domestic front. We're actually going to have this week, well, maybe not this week, but there will be in the very near future, one way or another, an infrastructure bill. It will no longer be a punchline. This will put 1 million Americans to work in good jobs that the government will demand pay at least $15 an hour, which they have the right to do because it's their money. These things are going to happen, and selling fear to people who say my life is getting better. Why would I throw out the people that are making my life better? Will fail. It always has. When times are tough, fear-mongering is what people sell. When your life isn't, when the lives of the people are not as good as they used to be, people sell fear. In the case of white males, it's you're going to be a minority. This is no longer going to be a white country. Black and brown people are going to take everything you own away from you. But when all of those white males are working and making more money than they have over the years, then they're paying less taxes and they're getting more from the government, they're saying, wait a minute. Why am I fighting the government? Why am I following you? This happened in a perfect example of that, and I hate to go back to that country again, but in the early 20s, people were unhappy in Germany. And then times came, turned around, and the roaring 20s hit Germany because Americans were investing tons and tons of money in Germany. But then came the Depression, and back came the same people who tried to sell the fear in the early 20s, only this time they sold it better. But things are going to get good, are getting good again. They're getting better. How do you sell it when the economy's roaring back? How do you sell it when infrastructure's passing? How do you sell it when there's more peace on the street? How do you sell it to people that there's something to be afraid of other than your vote doesn't count because you're going to be a minority soon? That's all they got going for them. So I agree with you. You know, Liz Cheney did a great thing standing up for the president, but she did. Now she's trying to get reelected, and she will say what she needs to say and do what she needs to do to get reelected, which makes her no better than the rest of the Republicans who basically, and some Democrats, to be honest with you, who just all they're worried about is getting reelected, saving their phony baloney jobs. Because they can't make a living anywhere else. So, you're right.
Yeah.
Those comments took back almost everything she said over the 2 weeks prior.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so we said what we really think about.
Yeah. I think we did.
And, yeah, took up half an hour. Not bad. Right. All right. So what else are we going to talk about today, Brendan? What's your subject matter for the day?
Well, so we had a little chat earlier, and we talked about our governor down here in Florida, Ron DeSantis, is at it again. So speaking about people who want government jobs.
Mo Ron DeSantis. Mo Ron DeSantis.
He's trying to stand out, man. He wants to be the next president. So he signed a bill, you know, the big enemy now, well, one of the big enemies now for the right is what they call big tech and Silicon Valley. You know, that's the new boogeyman. So they're mad, and they're mad about you know, platforms like Facebook and Twitter deplatforming people like Donald Trump and other people, purveyors of misinformation and lies. And of course, there are two major issues that these private companies, these private platforms, have decided they are not going to allow on their platforms. And that's number one, lies about COVID, right? Misinformation about COVID, misinformation about, you know, medical treatments and vaccines and all that, everything related to COVID. The other big issue, of course, is the big lie, you know, the election of 2020. They will not permit misinformation and conspiracy theories about, right, the 2020 election. You know, speaking of which, I can't let that go without mentioning, you know, that what's happening in Arizona is now leaking over to Georgia, right, with these absolutely ridiculous, you know, clown show, you know, quasi audits. I don't even know what you want to call it, right? Where you got people walking around. I've heard now professional election auditors have actually been in the facility in Arizona where this is going on, and they just shake their heads and say, this is unbelievable what's going on. And, you know, it's it's not an audit, and the conspiracy theories underlying, you know, at one point, apparently, you know, a group of people, right, who were undertaking this, whatever you want to call it, they came across a ballot that looks, it looked like it had like Cheeto stains on it. So, you know, so I guess whoever filled out the ballot was eating Cheetos or something like that. And somehow or other, in their minds, these people worked this into some kind of conspiracy, right? I'm at a complete loss to understand how it is that a Cheeto stain on a ballot indicates that the election was stolen from Donald Trump. I don't
know. Well, because it means wild animals were voting.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So
the Cheetos cheetah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And don't forget the bamboo ballots.
That means pandas are voting. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, and again, don't forget the bamboo.
Yeah, I mean it's what was it? Basically, what they're saying is that here's what happened. They have been inspecting,
yeah,
all of the voting machines in Maricopa County, which means that they have been tinkering with them, and they have been implanting, more probably than not, some form of virus in them that will change votes. So as a result of which, the Secretary of State, who is a Republican in Arizona, has said we're going to have to trash them all and buy new ones. Because there's no way we'll be able to find, they obviously will do it in a way that we can't find what they did to the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So every single one of those machines will be decertified and new ones will be purchased.
Mm-hmm.
This whole effort is literally going nowhere because they can't find what they're looking for or any indication of it. They've only gotten through 25% of the ballots. And at the end of June, they lose that building, that venue, permanently for the summer. And the ballots are no longer viewable because they have been tinkered and messed with and marked on and things that shouldn't be happening. And they have not found the first piece of evidence.
Well, they found the Cheeto stain, don't forget.
Yeah, that's true. In Georgia, they're not, if they go in there, they're not going to get access to the machines. And they will be supervised by members of the Fulton County Board of Elections staff. And the first time they mark on a ballot, the first time they do anything to change a ballot or to get rid of a ballot, the audit's over. and they're going to be watched on television, every single one of them. It's not going to be one TV. It's going to be several. They are going to be observed. And even
how many recounts and audits?
Five.
How many recounts and audits has Georgia already had? Yeah, I mean, come on.
Five.
What are we doing here?
Five. Whether they find anything or not, it sows distrust in our elective system.
Right.
And that's
right.
The purpose.
That's the purpose. That's the purpose.
They don't really think they're going to change the election. They know they're not going to change the election. They just want to be able to stand up and say, look what we did in this to make this the new normal.
Right.
That's the intent here.
Right.
So we're heading in that direction.
Yeah, and we're heading in the direction of the new normal being that any state where Republicans are in charge simply won't certify a Democratic winner.
I mean,
you know, we have to.
Did you hear about
Did you hear
about the story in Samoa? Did you hear what's happening in American Samoa?
No.
Okay. There's a guy that's been the prime minister for 22 years, and he had slowly but surely been passing laws to make it almost impossible to get him out of office.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an uprising in the vote, and he lost, and he challenged it, and the Supreme Court of Samoa ruled that he's out, and there's a new prime minister because that party has control over parliament,
mm-hmm.
or Congress, whatever they call it. And they made a big show of it yesterday, where the new prime minister walked down the street with the Chief Justice of the Samoan Supreme Court and all of it in his wig and all that kind of stuff, and walked up to the door of the Parliament building to have their ceremony, and it was locked, and they couldn't get in. But they were prepared for that. They set up a tent, and they had a meeting of Congress, or Parliament, in the tent. And elected her prime minister, and she was sworn in the tent. The outgoing and illegitimate prime minister is refusing to accept that he's not prime minister anymore,
mm-hmm.
refuses to open up the parliament building, refuses to obey an order from the Supreme Court of Samoa. That's Samoa, Trump stuff, okay? But refusing, and he feels he is the legitimate prime minister, and he's still in charge. That the election was rigged, and that's the only way he could lose. Of course, he had rigged it for him to win, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay? This thought process, this is how democracies die. This is exactly what people do. This is exactly what Putin has done. This is exactly what they're doing in Samoa. This is what happened in Venezuela. This is what happens in a lot of countries. The leader who rigs it can't believe that he lost and won't accept that he lost. And Trump has adopted this and exported it to what were long-standing democracies around the world. This is the danger when the shining light of democracy is dimmed. There's something when the rule of law means nothing. It's all a matter of sheer power. And that's the cowardice of the Republican Party, and that's what McCarthy shows more than anybody else, that cowardice, because he wants the Speaker's gavel so bad he will sell his soul for it. He will sell the country down the river just so he can hold that gavel until everybody says, you're superfluous, we don't need a Congress, go away. But he got to be Speaker. He got a Suburban. All of those members of the Trump Secret Service detail who have been shipped off to Alaska will come back to guard him. And he'll get the pension, and he'll get the big paycheck. He will accomplish nothing as long as there's a Democrat in the White House, but he doesn't care, because he doesn't care about the country. He literally has no concern for the country. It's all about it. What is it about the name McCarthy that leads us there?
Right.
Okay. If I were a person whose last name was McCarthy, I would change it tomorrow. It just doesn't bode well.
Not
because they're all
anyway.
Like Charlie McCarthy. Well, they're all like Charlie McCarthy. Just a dummy. Dangerous
well,
dummy, but a dummy nonetheless.
This is going to be interesting, trying to circle back, excuse me, to the issue
DeSantis.
I was talking about. DeSantis, right. We took this off-ramp because of what I was talking about, that the social media platforms won't allow lies about the election, which lead to everything we just discussed, on their platforms. DeSantis just signed a law under which if any social media platform that deplatforms a candidate for office in Florida.
Statewide office.
Well, yeah, but from what I just read, if it's statewide office and you deplatform somebody, it's a $250,000 a day fine. If it's some other office, it's $25,000 a day. So the big one is right for statewide offices. And
what is he running for in 2022?
Yeah.
He's
yeah,
running for re-election
right.
as the governor of the state of Florida.
Yeah.
That's a statewide
right.
office, the last I heard.
Yes, I think that's. I think you're correct on that.
Okay. Just want to make sure everybody's clear on that one.
Yeah, right. apparently, whoever drew this up and the governor who signed it, have not acquainted themselves with a constitutional triviality called the First Amendment, which permits private actors, like, for example, a company like Twitter or Facebook, which permits them or provides for them their own freedom of speech and association. One of the most, I think, misunderstood principles, and this is, again, an idea that I don't hear Democrats spreading around. I hear Republicans all the time spreading it around, is that somehow or other private media companies or private social platforms are violating their First Amendment rights by stifling their communications. What people need to understand is a private entity is not capable of violating your constitutional rights. The Constitution is directed to the government. It creates the government, it empowers the government, and it limits the power of government. It is the Constitution is not there to create, empower, or limit social media companies, radio stations, newspapers, or anything like that. Those private entities cannot violate the Constitution.
As it relates
when
to
you. Right. As it relates to right and individual rights.
Right.
So if Florida is telling Twitter and Facebook, you're not allowed to deplatform, right? You, a private entity, are not allowed. I mean, this is the irony of it, right? Twitter and Facebook can't violate your constitutional rights. The state of Florida can, right? The government can violate your constitutional rights. So Florida passes a law saying that these private companies, Facebook and Twitter and the like, they have to allow content on their platforms whether they want to or not. They have to provide
which
a platform
what?
For
which ultimately does what? which ultimately does what?
Violates
the rights of the platform.
That's right.
I just want to make sure that everybody understands that and catches that little dichotomy there. Okay, that's all. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. You know, and the right to speak, and here's another thing, right? The right to speak and express yourself includes, and this is clear under Supreme Court precedent because it makes sense, includes the right not to speak or not to associate yourself with ideas that you find offensive. One of the most famous cases, it sounds like a small case, but it makes the point. One of the most famous First Amendment cases, everybody's interested, it's called Woolley, W-O-O-L-E-Y versus Maynard, where Woolley versus Maynard. And what had happened is the New Hampshire license plate has the state motto on it, which is live free or die. And a Jehovah's Witness named Maynard, on religious grounds, disagreed with that statement. And so he kept on taping over the or die part on his license plate. And there was a state law that says, you know, you have to have the motto on your license plate. It goes up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, per Justice Berger, says, no. The state of New Hampshire cannot force a person to drive around with a motto on the license plate with which that person disagrees, right, sincerely disagrees on religious or political grounds. And we're coming back to the point. You have a right. Your right to free speech includes your right not to associate yourself with ideas you find offensive. That's why you can't force somebody to recite the Pledge of Allegiance or any other pledge for that matter. The government, right, cannot force somebody to do that because they have a right not to.
I don't say the Pledge of Allegiance with under God in it. That's not the way I learned it.
Right.
Okay, that was not in the Pledge of Allegiance until 1954.
Right.
The same time we put in God We Trust on our money. And that was in reaction to who? Another one of those McCarthy kind of people.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
The point is, if Twitter or Facebook does not want to associate itself with the big lie about the election, if they do not want to associate themselves with conspiracy theories about vaccines, they, private actors, have a First Amendment right not to associate themselves with those types of ideas. So Florida's law is going nowhere.
You mean like people who don't want to make a cake for a gay wedding? The Republicans were up in arms and said that was a violation of their First Amendment rights. Now all of a sudden, when they won that one, they say, "Oh, we changed our mind."
Right.
Okay, when it's good for us, we believe in that. When it's not good for us, we don't believe in that.
Right, and don't forget the Dale versus Boy Scouts case, right, where the Supreme Court says, it's fine for the Boy Scouts to say that a gay person can't be a Scoutmaster because freedom of association, right? They don't have to associate themselves with that quote unquote lifestyle.
Precisely.
But here we are. Where apparently private media companies don't have such rights, right? One of the more entertaining things, Jeff, I recently heard was the idea. This got all over. Speaking of social media, this kind of got all over social media, where somebody proffered the idea. This is how stupid some of this stuff gets. That actually Twitter and Facebook are state actors, right? They are public, right? They can violate your constitutional rights. Why? Because they're publicly traded, right? And that somehow transforms a private company into a state actor, right? Because they have stock. No. And I'm going to tell you,
you know who started that idea?
You
buy a lot of stock, okay, in Facebook. But remember, Zuckerberg still owns 51% of Facebook.
Right.
So no matter how much stock you buy,
right?
Okay, it's like what was the expression that someone said? No matter how many no matter how many shares of stock you have, I always have one more than you. I used to tell my children, okay, we'll take a vote, okay? You get two votes, I get one. You get two votes, but I get three, because no matter what happens, I always have one more vote than you do. Okay? Okay.
All right. Well,
just remember that one, all right?
I want to throw this out there. I don't want to end this without saying, you know, guess who is the intellectual heavyweight behind the idea that any publicly traded company is magically transformed into a state actor that can violate your constitutional rights?
Well, let's see. I can name a few. Let's see. Louis Gohmert. Ted Cruz. Marjorie Green. Let's see. Donald Trump. Which is why he never went public. McCarthy, McConnell. No, McConnell knows better. He would never say anything like that. I missed him? Did I miss him?
Yes. It is. It is. Are you ready? Drum roll. Baio. Scott Baio.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you remember how many months ago I told you that, you know, Scott Baio was apparently someone, you know, he said something once a few years ago, and he just got reamed, and everybody called him a moron. So literally used the word moron. So he went on to his webpage or his Facebook page and said, the next person who calls me a moron, I'm going to sue them. So every once in a while, I go onto his webpage where everything is public. And I write, you're a moron, please sue me. Okay. I literally do this. If you think I'm kidding, I'm not. I'm dead serious about this. I'm trolling Scott Baio. Okay? Every once in a while, I just go on and say, you're a moron, please sue me. I have not been served yet. Okay?
Okay.
I don't think he's ever going to really sue me. And that shows what kind of moron he is, that he actually challenges people not to call him a moron because he's going to sue them. And then millions of people call him a moron. Okay? Okay. And he's going to sue all these people, right? That's how moronic this guy is. Okay? Now, he is a moron. Yeah. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
That's quite a qualification, right? You were an extra on Happy Days. I mean, so sure. I mean, that's that entitles you to philosophize on.
I must believe that he's as stupid as Chachi was. He became his character. Okay.
Of course, any young people listening to this don't even know what we're talking about, right? They're like, what is Happy Days? Who was Chachi? Yeah.
Yeah, who was Chachi? Well, you know, go watch a few of them and go watch the later episodes of Happy Days, okay, when Ron Howard had hair. Okay, he's the same Ron Howard, by the way, that was on, you know, Andy of Mayberry. Okay, this guy's been, you know, he's been in our lives for like 70 years now. Okay, and he's only 70 years old. So be that as it may. That just, I can't believe it. I guess they also, in whoever, let me tell you something. I don't believe that they don't know. That the Florida legislature and DeSantis don't know that what they passed is unconstitutional.
Right.
They want to make an issue of Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
Next year. They want to say they're violating your First Amendment rights, even when every federal court's going to tell them no, they're not. Including the United States Supreme Court, if it goes that far. But that's the battle he wants. That he is going to say things. He's going to purposely say things on his Twitter account. He's going to purposely say things on his Facebook account that are going to cause Facebook to suspend him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or Twitter to suspend him. He's going to do it on purpose. He's picking a fight is what he's doing. He wants to make them the boogeyman. To detract from the fact that Florida was one of the worst places during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
and that he's against people actually making a living wage, and that he is doing everything he can to continue to degrade the educational system. Okay, look, Charlie Crist, I will not deny this. Charlie Crist is a friend of mine. I've known him for over 25 years. And he is a friend of mine. And even though I don't live in his district, I have contributed to his campaign. And I make that disclosure right now. And I will contribute and I will do everything I can for him to be elected governor of the state of Florida. Now, that does not destroy my objective viewpoint of moron DeSantis. It doesn't change that objective viewpoint of the things that he has done, the things that he has said, and the idiocy that he promotes. But I know that Charlie knows what's coming. I'm sure he knows that DeSantis is not going to fight him. He's going to fight a culture war.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's going to try to do. That's very obvious. And so Charlie's going to have to pick a fight with DeSantis so that he distracts him from that and makes him fight over the things that are important to the people of the state of Florida. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year. They're clearing the way for Charlie to be the Democratic candidate. Val Demings is going to run for the United States Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So another congresswoman from Florida has decided not to run, clearing the way for Val Demings. And Nikki Fried has her eye on something. I don't remember what it was, but Nikki Fried has decided she's not going to run for governor, at least as of right now. She's not going to run for governor. They're clearing the way so that Democrats are not fighting among themselves,
mm-hmm.
which is friggin' brilliant. I wish they'd do it more often. So, let's see. By the way, obviously they know about Section 230. Is it 240?
Yeah.
Is it 230 or 240?
230.
I can't remember.
It's 230.
230. Yeah, which obviously protects them from being from such laws as this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it clearly protects them. The only claim that the state of Florida could make is that they're somehow a monopoly. They are not a monopoly. They are not an antitrust. They're not liable for antitrust because they've been removed from that. And there are so many platforms for them to go to that they don't have to go to Facebook and Twitter. They can go wherever they want. Now, Donald's finding out that he is social media irrelevant right now. No one's reading his blog because they know he can't write. So somebody's doing it for him. And they're following their social media, their instant gratification media platforms. So, the bottom line is if you're not on Facebook, you're not on Twitter, you're irrelevant to the general public. And so he's picking a fight. He's trying to intimidate them from taking him off of those platforms when he says the absurd things that he says.
Yeah, Silicon Valley is their new buzzword, right? He wants to run. He doesn't want to run against Crist. He wants to run against Silicon Valley.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely.
So.
It's absurd. They know it's unconstitutional. They don't care. They want the court battle. He wants to get kicked off so he can go to court and charge Facebook with a crime and assert a $250,000 a day fine against them, not understanding that Facebook could keep him off for 100 days until the election, and it would be basically chump change to them. $2 billion does not mean anything to Mark Zuckerberg. Okay? He doesn't care. At this point, he really won't care because he'll just make it back the following year. He didn't care. Okay. I just, you know, so the idea, what are they going to do, put Zuckerberg in jail? Good luck getting him extradited for that. Okay. Not going to happen. But the next time he flies in a plane over Florida, we'll send National Guard jets up to force the plane down so they could get him. I mean, Lavrushenko just taught him a new trick. So,
yeah, that's
you know.
Right. That's right. Ryanair, right?
Yeah. You know, an Irish plane going from one EU country to another flies over what's basically an air corridor, okay, over Belarus.
Mm-hmm.
And but they think they have the right to force the plane to land. It would have been interesting to see what the Ryanair pilot would have done, saying, no, I'm only about an hour away from where I'm supposed to go. I'll land over there. Would they have shot the plane down? That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
But now what's going to happen is there are no planes. We don't have to worry about the air corridor over Belarus because there ain't going to be planes flying in or out of Belarus. Their own planes will not be allowed to land anywhere but in Russia.
Right.
Okay? And no airliner is going to fly into Belarus. I mean, that's going to be the sanction. And they'll just fly around Belarus. That's all.
Talk about how democracies die, right?
That's how democracies die.
Yep. Hey, I wanted to get your thoughts on something.
Absolutely one of the ways.
Yeah. Before,
a reporter writes something that Lavrushenko doesn't like, so as a result of which, we'll just send a fighter jet up and we'll make 150 right. people land in Belarus, a place that they absolutely have no desire to be, okay, and probably charge them for the food.
Yeah. That's because one way to get that's one way to increase tourism, huh?
Yeah, you know, and because you see that guy? You see that guy over there? He is a quote, journalist who says bad things about me. So he's a traitor, and we're going to torture him, make him say what we want, and then we're going to draw and quarter him. But we're sorry we inconvenienced you. Here's some of our wonderful food. Do you like beets?
Oh, God. I don't know how we got on this.
By the way, the other voice you hear is Hezzy, and he's laughing. I like that. I like making Hezzy laugh. Okay.
I like beets.
Yeah, borscht. My mother loved borscht, too. Okay.
Me, too.
The last thing she ever asked us to make before she died. Okay, can I have a bowl of borscht? She ate two bites, and then she was done.
Okay, for those of us who don't know, what's borscht?
It's a soup made out of beets. It's served cold with sour cream in it.
Ah, that sounds good.
It's delicious.
It's
a good
not.
Way to go.
Okay, I'll remember that. Okay. I hate beets almost as much as I hate Brussels sprouts. Okay. Okay.
They're
right there on the same
true.
Level.
I'm the anomaly. I like them both.
I do, too. I like Brussels sprouts. A little bit of butter, get them nice and blackened. They're great.
Well, then I got the perfect place for you to go. Drive over to St. Petersburg to a place called The Library. It's a restaurant in, believe it or not, the Johns Hopkins Children's Hospital over there. It's actually right there at the hospital. Okay? Mm-hmm. And they serve – that's that big box of beets that I found in my trunk that stunk up my car.
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
where
right.
those came from. Okay, yeah. You'll right. love it. Get the side order. It's great. but you're not having lunch with me. Okay, so
Well, gentlemen, we're reaching that moment of no return, so we're going to have to wait for you next week. So both of you enjoy a bowl of borscht with a side order of Brussels sprouts.
You take care of yourself, and be well, okay?
Yeah.
All the best. Thank you both.
All right.
Okay,
thanks, Hezzy. We'll talk later. Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye.
Here we have law professors Brendan Beery and Jeff Swartz. Always a pleasure talking to them. So we'll speak to them next week, and it'll all be about the Constitution. Okay, let's move on to West. Carlos. Carlos Burgos, how are you, sir? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you? I'm well.
What a pleasure to have you on today. First time that we're going to be able to speak. So you're running for Yonkers City Council, council member to the 4th District. What got you involved in politics? You know, this is a really heavy duty sport in Yonkers.
Yes, it is. It is. And thanks again for bringing me on. I think all of it is political, right? Sort of everything is political.
You got
That's
it.
My approach. You know, I'm studying in a gender studies department for my doctoral work, and I'm always reminded that, you know, the personal is political. And so, you know, I follow that sort of tradition, and I feel like I've always been in it. And now, you know, it makes sense for me to step up and, you know, take some of the work out of the academy and bring it into what we call local politics, which is always, like I said, it's all connected. But I think to get a little more concrete to your question, I learned, we were all in the pandemic, and it seems like we're beginning to sort of move away from this space, but, you know, slowly but surely, mm-hmm. but in the thick of it, you know, in our district, we had a bunch of concerns with students not getting laptops in Yonkers, and it was like one laptop per family. And then there was the senior center was sort of in very, very complicated conditions that have not yet been resolved. Mm-hmm. And it seems like our council person wasn't really responsive. So I it made sense for me to jump in.
Well, I went to your website. I guess the best way to reach it is go to carlosforyonkers.com, and it's on Facebook. And one of the things that struck me was you had like a little box, like an advertisement that said a responsive platform. You know, you're espousing a responsive platform. And then it says under there, listen, advocate, and change. And I said, oh, my God, I mean, this is anathema to the politics that we know. You know, I mean, how often do people listen, much less advocate, because maybe when they were listening, they didn't hear. You know, so you know,
right.
Sometimes you think they're hearing. They've got two ears. It looks like ears, but maybe they're a hearing aid would be better. And then if you don't hear well, then you can't advocate because you don't know what you heard. And then how do you bring about change? So this is realistic. And you believe all of these things. So what have you heard when you've been walking about and you're learning more and more about the politics as you're going around collecting signatures to put you on the ballot, which you successfully did? What have you heard is important? What's pertinent to the public?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm noticing more and more that this responsive idea is not what people are used to, which frustrates me. You know, I didn't realize it was as innovative as it is.
Which means evidently you're able to decipher reality from from the make believe. So evidently,
okay.
When you put together, it's making sense. It's got to resonate.
Oh, it does. No, for sure. People are very appreciative. And so yeah, I'm doing what I keep calling a listening tour, you know, and it's happened, it started happening before I got on the ballot. It started happening before we started collecting signatures. It's really what encouraged me to run is just sort of listening to folks. But you know, and I'll just say that the responsive platform is going to continue into, you know, the responsive tenure as a council person, you know, so it won't end. It doesn't just end. It sort of continues. But what I've heard so far and what I continue to hear are some of the things that you'd probably hear everywhere, right? Like the streets need to be fixed, right? But I think the thing about streets in this particular, at least in my neighborhood, where I've been here since I was nine, and this very, you know, in a 4-block radius since I was 9 years old. And we have potholes that we've memorized, you know, we have potholes that we know where to not, you know, where we know not to move our car. You know, we can go a little bit over the yellow line for a second to miss that pothole, you know. And so that's the common thing that just it shouldn't be that. We shouldn't memorize them, you know. So that's one thing. The streets are just, it's been too long, and people talk about it all the time. So that's one thing. And we see, you know, magically during election season, they're being fixed, you know. And so the voters are keen to that, and they're not sort of they're not being tricked. The other thing that I didn't actually have a full sense of until I started talking with people is the lamp posts and lighting. And there are a few dark spots that people continue to mention, you know, in the district that they're like, you know, we just need some streetlights here. They haven't been streetlights. We've been asking for them. No, you know, we haven't gotten them yet. Huh. What's going on? Could you do that? And I'm like, oh, cool. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, we should have streetlights. And then, of course, we have our council person is doing a decorative lighting program, which is not what people are asking for. You know, it goes back to what you're saying. They're not listening, you know. And so we don't need decorative lights. We need light. Anyway, so.
We need light.
That, yeah.
But that's a question.
Should I stop? Yeah. Okay, go.
It's such an elemental need. But when you get into politics, one of the problems that I've seen is that things are not discussed in the open. So that should, when you go to the Yonkers City Council, and that should be a platform for discussion. And then why isn't it? Would you be willing? Do you have what it takes to broach and say, hey, you know, in my district, we need lights. We all fix the potholes because I already memorized where they are. I could tell you right now. You want me to draw you a picture? I can. Well, where's the fear? And should there be any fear in what should be an august chamber, you know, that speaks to the desires, the needs, and the wants of the community that is supposed to be represented? We don't hear very much of that.
Yeah, I'm puzzled by that as much as it sounds like your question is, you know. I don't know, and I am not interested in doing anything other than I'm not interested in doing anything other than what people are asking for. I mean, it seems very simple. It seems very like you said, sort of elementary, and you know, I'm frustrated more and more when I hear people say things like, you know, we need the garbage picked up. I'm like, are you serious? Like, what is this? You know, like come on, you know, it's not, I mean, we're a relatively large city, you know? So, to answer your question directly, yeah, like I'm in there. This is what we're doing. This is the whole point. I have no other reason to be in that seat other than to continue to, you know, raise these issues. And, you know, where's the fear was your question. I don't know. I mean, my sense is, you know, I don't know. We can speculate forever. I don't know. But maybe people have,
you know,
different reasons for being.
One doesn't need
to
rationalize these issues are, and they're demeaning, and they're not working. And every 4 years or every 2 years is not sufficient, you know, to make amends for a reality that doesn't work. So if this is evidently the issue in the district, it's time for a change. So, So how did you even get started in politics? Because you realize that that is that governs everything that we just want, that we need. Is that how you got to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think,
your studies,
you know,
or
yeah, maybe that's it's funny. You're reading my mind. Go ahead, finish your question. Sorry.
Well, you know, I'm an old guy, Ray. I know some of the answers, not all of them. God help me.
Yeah.
You know, at this age, I should have known all the answers, but I don't.
Yeah, no, I was just there's so many different ways, you know, like as an academic, right, like a lot of times what my work is, I just finished yesterday, thank goodness, my second year in the program. So that means I have no more coursework, which is great. Oh, thanks. Yeah. So it frees me up to, I know you had some faculty on before me. It sounded like some great, I only caught the tail end with the Brussels, but, you know,
they were talking about the Constitution. We have them two law professors every Tuesday.
Right. No, I read. That's great. I need to listen in. So coursework is done. The point is, I don't have to take classes anymore. But when I'm in these classes, what was happening over the past 2 years, and this may have been sort of the subconscious thing that I don't pay enough attention to, is that, you know, we always are talking about what governments should be doing. You know, it's sort of like everything that, and especially in the women's gender and sexuality studies department. I mean, that's all we're talking about is, the state and how it sort of, you know, operates and what it does do, what it doesn't do, what it should do. And I've been thinking, well, what shouldn't some of us be in these positions? Shouldn't some of us be, you know, sort of, you know, making these decisions alongside everybody else? Shouldn't we have our voices in there? And a lot of people are just we don't want to deal with it. You know, I agree. Yeah.
Well, that's the name of the game, because if you're not in it, sometimes your voice is not heard, your sensibilities are not respected, and you need a voice. And, you know, and if you have that sensitivity to the issues, all the better, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and it certainly helps, you know, with someone like me I've been here for, you know, most of my life in this very same area, you know, and so I don't know all of it, right? I know through my lived experience, but a lot of people that I work with professionally, they move around the country because jobs are here and schools are there, and so they haven't been able to stay in their, you know, childhood neighborhood, and I have. And so I think I have a unique sort of position and relationship to all of this stuff.
Okay. And how would you describe that unique connection?
Yeah, you know, I in my district, I went to the elementary school, one of the elementary schools. Basically, my elementary and middle school are in my district, you know, and I think I don't know if that happens much for people, you know, and who are running, you know. Certainly, I don't think that's the case for the current council person. But, you know, so there's that. And then I went on and did all this education stuff, right? I've gotten a master's degree in higher education and, you know, all this stuff. And I've worked in the private sector. I've sort of done all these things, you know, and I still remained in this place, you know. And something happens when you stay in a place and you have all these other experiences, I have a perspective that I think is like unique because of that. You know, I worked retail, right? Like I did I met a young voter, you know, young to me, and it feels like we're probably, you know, maybe only like 10, 12 years apart, but she goes, you know, tell me who you are. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, like I used to work right here in Cross County, Children's Place, and you know, a whole bunch of did American Eagle, and she's like, oh yeah, we've all done that, you know. And so there's a way that I've done that I can relate to so many different things because I've just, I don't know, it's just sort of luck of the draw, I guess, or just the way my life has unfolded that, you know, puts me in that sort of unique spot.
Well, one of the big issues in that district is certainly the seniors and the dog park. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Mm.
And are you speaking to the seniors? What do they have to say about it?
I was there at the senior center. This is the Bernie Speckman Senior Center. It's in my district on last Tuesday and last Friday. I was there meeting folks and introducing myself. I was dealing with legal battles to stay in the race for a long time, but we finally got out of that, and so I got some time to spend with them. And, I think, like so many people in the city, the seniors are just happy to have another option, you know. They're really happy to know that you know, I was able to stick through this really complicated process and come out on the other side as another option for them, you know. And not only another option, but someone who's sitting down, like you said, listening to them, you know. I'm not talking over them. I'm trying to understand what their issues are, what they're talking about. I mean, they're totally engaged and active, and, you know, they're running protests, and they're, you know, they just need
people
to do what they say.
A lot of
younger people
haven't gotten to know what it takes, the intestinal fortitude to stand up for themselves. And they've been through the ringer, and they're the ones that built this city.
That's what I say. Exactly. That's exactly what. Right. I think we've talked about that before. That's right. Like they we owe them, and we should be looking up to them, you know. And so that's, I think, you know, people sense that in me, and we had some great conversations, and they're really frustrated because, you know, they're being treated as if they're sort of incompetent or, you know, unable to make decisions and being, you know, all strange things, you know. Rather than the issues, which is, you know, they're asking very clear, concrete issues. We shouldn't even be talking about any of that. They just want, you know, right now there's like a soap bar in the bathroom at the center. And it's like, no, we need something more sanitary, not only because of the global pandemic, but because, we shouldn't have soap bars hanging around when in public spaces. You know, that's never happened. So there's bad ventilation in the center. They've been talking about that for years. The windows are terrible. You can't even see outside the windows. You know, they had a bug issue recently that wasn't, you know, resolved. They're right now they're out in the sun, which is a big problem because as I'm sure so many of us know, you can't be in the sun with some of this radioactive medication that's given to people. And, you know, they want to be outside, so people will take a chance. They'll be in the sun, whatever. They're like, oh, I'll do it for 45 minutes and go back in, you know, and it's also hot. Anyway, so there's all sorts of things that, you know, if we were just a little bit more responsive, I don't know if it needs to be, I mean, look, to me, it just doesn't seem that hard. You know, it's like, okay, just listen to folks, go outside, talk to them, and then make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Which is really cool. What are some of your positions that you've already taken, you know, just espousing them? And, you know, I think you, well, I don't know, what are the issues that you think were overtly have come to pass by the New York State Legislature that you believe in? Oh, and then even before then, what party line are you running under? How do people find your name on the ballot?
Thanks. Yeah, it's a Democratic. I'm on the Democratic. There's a Democratic primary, so.
Okay.
I was endorsed by Working Families, but we're in the Democratic primary.
Okay, so even if you lose, even if you should lose, well, you might win the Democratic Party line, too. So it could go either way, but then you'll still be on the ballot as a Working Families candidate. Or are you being challenged?
There's a long story behind that. We didn't get on the line for reasons that, you know, make no sense to get into. But we didn't get on the Working Families line.
Okay.
We could only fight for one in court. There was so much going on at the time. We were dealing with a lot of quick decisions that needed to be made as far as like what to do in the court. And in the court, we decided to defend our Democratic line. And we defended that successfully. So we're not on Working Families line, but we're the only candidate who has the Working Families Party endorsement, which is important. You know, there's a person who's not endorsed by the Working Families Party that's on the line.
Right.
Anyway, so there's a Democratic primary. The person I'm running against won as a Republican, and he's now in his first Democratic primary. So we're both running as a Democrat for the first time. And the issues you asked about, the issues, one big issue on the council level that I think is worth talking about that is a distinction, just to talk distinctions here, is this affordable housing ordinance. It's a big deal in the city council. It's being pushed back as far as humanly possible. And it's being basically the ordinance. I'll explain it real quick. The ordinance would require developers of large development units to, or rather, large housing units to allocate a certain percentage to affordable housing. So in this case, currently the city has 10%. So 10% of large housing developments are affordable. Have 10% affordable units. Such a complicated language.
Right.
We're pushing that from 10% to 20%. So now it's 100 units come up, 20% of them are going. We're hoping that we can get 20% of them to be affordable. My position is yes, we need them to. We need at least 20%. That's my position. At least 20%. You know, when I talk to people on the street, they're like 20%. What's that? You know, why is it 20%? I'm like, I agree. It should be more than that, but. The fight is still at 20%. It's a strange thing. So they want to. There are people on the council who want to keep it to less than 20. There are people on the council who want to keep it to more than 20. I would be with the people who want to keep it at, to want to vote for 20 or more. You know, that's where my vote would be. And if it gets pushed back long enough, I may end up being the person to vote on it. So, you know, it's such a strange thing.
Why is that important? And what are people looking for? Is it because there isn't a large enough stock of affordable housing in Yonkers? Or
yeah,
that could
yeah, that's,
be
that's
something
cool. yeah.
that we incorporate that we also need people and people want to live in Yonkers as well, and yet they need to afford to be able to afford it. So is that something that we're moving toward that we may not have been sensitive to, not just in Yonkers, but in other communities for the last, I don't know, 50 years, and now now it's okay?
That's interesting. Yeah, I guess it depends on who the we is, you know. It depends on who the we is.
Yeah, I don't know who the
about,
we is.
You know?
Well,
yeah,
the we is
yeah,
whoever's
think,
in power. Those are the we.
Yeah, there it is. I think the we's who have been in these decision-making seats are often people who are, you know, wealthy. You know, that's the bottom line. Like, you know, there are very few people who have lived in affordable housing or in public housing. Who are in office are able to make these decisions, mainly because it costs a lot of money to run a campaign.
very true. Do you think though more people are going to come out to vote? Are they becoming more engaged than ever before, of all ages?
Sure. I mean, we all saw last year. Yeah, we all saw what happened last year. I mean, a lot of people are looking to see if there are people who are willing to fight for them now. There's a moment now that. People are finally considering again, you know, myself included, the possibilities of politics, the way that we can actually enact some sort of humane legislation, you know, some sort of, wow, okay. I mean, the affordable housing ordinance is complicated because even if we get it to be affordable, we all know some of these units aren't even affordable, right? Like they're still not even, it's affordable to who is the question, right? But getting tripped up on well, where we were, but yeah, go ahead.
No, but I mean, affordable housing, you know, 20% or maybe more, depending on who you are and what your perspective is. doesn't seem like, I don't know, an outrageous need
I agree.
Or even a demand. And maybe one of the, it also speaks to the fact that maybe we don't have affordable housing that doesn't require a 20% component, but should be a percentage that is affordable on a different scale.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, oh, you were,
you know,
and the other
it's
thing
affordable
is,
housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to add to the go ahead, sorry.
No, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm excited now. You got me excited now. I was thinking that you were asking, you know, the people, right? Like, who's going to live there? And I think it's just, you know, my parents, you know, I think about them. They had to leave Yonkers maybe 2 years ago because it was just too expensive.
Uh-huh.
You know? And they live right here in my district, in District 4, you know. And,
okay.
You know, what would that have been like for them if they wanted to stay? They didn't want to leave, you know. What would that have been like for them if there was a place for them where they could, you know, stay? And so I think it's not about who's I think you asked, like, do people who want to come in, people who want to come in, do they need affordable housing units? Sure, absolutely. But it's also people who are here, you know, people who've been here for generations. You know, my family's not here for generations, but, you know, there are people, families who've been here for generations who are who may not be able to stay. And that is, we should think about that. You know, we should really think about it, and we should ask our developers to think about that. And we shouldn't be shy about, you know, raising those families' concerns in the council. And I understand that it must be very complicated, but I'm up for that, you know.
Well, I guess maybe some of the developers that are here that are interested are maybe they're only interested in market rate housing, and maybe we're not introducing the city of Yonkers to people who build affordable housing units. Maybe it's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you've got people who have a mindset, and that's where they're going. And that may be the only way they know how to finance, you know, at market rate. And other people are more adept at financing at a different level. But you evidently feel so passionate about that you probably will be able to give expression to that. You know, should you be elected to office? That's important.
Right. Yeah. I feel like it would be my responsibility.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you're running under that platform, yeah, it would be your responsibility. And I'll make sure you keep your word.
trust me, don't
That's
worry.
Not
it's great. We should. I think that, you know, I'm all about the accountability piece, you know, hold me accountable, you know, otherwise we see things happen. But
the people will hold the people will hold you accountable, and, you know, you have to be believable, and they'll vote for people they believe in, and that's very important. So very, very exciting. Well, I'm thrilled. It's our first outing and together on the show, and we only spent a couple of minutes before, so I hardly knew you, and I heard there was somebody by your last name, and I said, oh, you know, this is very interesting. And are you also, are you fluent? You have a Spanish name. Are you fluent in Spanish as well?
I'm not fluent. I can understand a lot of Spanish. I speak a little bit of Spanish. I'm working on it. My constituents are sometimes satisfied, sometimes not. So I have a lot of work to do when it comes to Spanish. But I can understand more than I can speak. The seniors are very happy with the level of Spanish I spoke, for whatever that's worth. They're like,
oh that's very good.
You can understand us. I was like, okay, great, thanks. I passed the first test, you know. But I have work to do in that area for sure.
Right. Well, a language course doesn't hurt.
That's,
you know,
right. No, Rosetta Stone is on my list.
You could do like a half hour a day or every other day.
That's right.
And you'll be able to catch on real quick. So very,
and,
very
and you know,
interesting.
Yeah. That's right.
Go ahead.
That's right.
No, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, talking with people in the neighborhood in Spanish is helping me too. So I'm getting out there, I'm talking with folks, they're helping me out.
All right. Okay. Well, I don't know if there's a large Gaelic community as well in your district. So
that's
I don't know if you speak any of that. So I don't speak it at all. But I know somebody who does, so I'm very happy I have like an interpreter.
I need one of those as well.
Oh, you need one of those? I'll try to hook you up. It turns out, unfortunately, we're at the end of the half hour, but I'll be speaking to you again next week. And so we can get a little bit more in depth on to other issues that you're passionate about. Thank you very, very much. So what's your website address?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks, Eddie. It's Carlos, the number 4, Yonkers.com. So Carlos 4 Yonkers, like District 4, Yonkers.com.
Okay. Okay, excellent. And is there a phone contact if people want to reach out to you?
Yep, it's right on the site. If you go to contact us, you'll see it. But it is 914-294-4769.
Okay.
It's right
perfect.
On contact us. You can find it.
Excellent. Very good. Enjoy the day, and thank you for coming on the show. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. You too.
Be
Bye-bye.
Well. Bye. All right, let's move on to, I think by accident, I dropped my call. Hold on a second. We're going to be getting a call from, let me just check if I have the number. Bear with me a moment. I'm trying to figure out. Well, oh, here he is. Good morning.
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you? Hello?
Oh, I can't believe it. James, how are you? James Nolan. I guess somehow the line was dropped, so my apology. Don't know how that happened.
All right.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am really excited for you. You're going to be doing a major fundraiser in Bronxville. Mary Marvin is underwriting it. Or sponsoring it, I don't know if that's the right word, but sponsoring it, and also Mike Breen, who's the Yonkers City Council Minority Leader, that's huge. How, you know, what brought them about to choose you?
Well, it's a great honor, and they've both been fantastic with helping me with my campaign. You know, it's just about coordinating together and, you know, having the right opportunity. It's only great to have, you know, the minority leader of Yonkers that represents the big part of my district and the mayor of Bronxville that has endorsed me previously to host together
right.
this event. And, you know, we're looking forward to it.
That is really terrific. So how do you prepare for a fundraiser? I've never prepared a fundraiser because I've never run for political office. What does that entail?
Well, first, you know, you have to have the right team on your side, you know, people that you can rely on that they can help you get the word out. Then you got to make sure that, you know, you have the prices lined up and the venue. Also, you know, if you have a host, make sure they're on board, they're available.
Well, have you found the venue? Have you found the venue?
Yes.
Okay, well, where is it?
It's called Ernie's Wine in, Ernie's Wine in Bronxville.
Okay. And have you been there? I haven't been there myself, or maybe I passed it by, I don't know. So that's a great venue. So people from Yonkers and Bronxville will probably be able to attend.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's very convenient and local for everybody to come out. It's
mm-hmm.
in the heart of the district of Bronxville. And it's a beautiful venue, and we're going to have a great time.
And do you remember the date that it's going to take place?
Yes, June 17th, from 6:30 to 9:30. It's a Thursday.
Oh, well, that's cool. Oh, so that's like about 3 weeks away, or 4 weeks. Maybe 4 weeks.
Yes.
My math is not so good. Very, very exciting. And As you're going about, you know, in Bronxville and in Yonkers, the district that would be incorporated into the 15th district, what are people still saying, or what is it that is still left undone for the district that you would have purview over as a Westchester County Board legislator should you win the election?
Well, people want to make sure that
taxes are not raised. Do people understand what you could do for them? Do people understand what you can do as a county board legislator? Or do they mix up your role with a city council person or with the mayor or, I don't know, some other positions? Do people understand what a county board legislator is?
Some people do, and then you have some people that are, you know, that don't know, so you got to explain it. But, you know, first of all, we got to make sure that Westchester remains affordable. We already pay a high property tax that we must not keep continuing to raise it. Second is, you know, we have a homeless problem that keeps on growing that we have to take care of. Mental health mm-hmm. is an issue that we need to address. There's a senior housing and benefits problem that we have to fix, you know, and do what's right by the seniors. You know, there's many infrastructure problems. You know, there's some areas like in parks that are not being addressed and properly maintained. So these are all issues mm-hmm. that I plan on addressing, you know, especially some of the violence that's occurring in some of the cities, you know, trying to reduce that to make it safe for people to go out about with their lives. You know, we have resources for kids that are being taken away, and we need to address that as well. So I look forward to, you know, working hand-in-hand with everybody to try and address all these needs. You know, you can't promise everything because it's just not realistic. But, you know, if you can do your best and come up with constructive plans and move forward with changing it up, that's what matters.
Mm. Well, you know, I can appreciate what you've just expressed. So as one of 17 Westchester County Board legislators, how do you promote the concepts that you just espoused when others don't necessarily? How do you influence another 16 people? And is the directive for the Westchester County Board legislator, is that defined by the Westchester County Executive and then gets given expression by the membership? So is there a give and take, and how does that function? What would your role be? How do you convince another 16 people to do what you need, what you know you need for Yonkers and Bronxville?
Well, we have to show the examples of what the pattern is. And what's going on? Like, why? How are these people being affected? And, you know, you break it down and you do your homework and you show them and you advocate, you become, you know, you push forward.
Well, can you explain what it is that you, can you explain, you know, with greater clarity what it is you're saying rather than it's too nebulous. It's hard for me to fathom exactly what you're talking about. What are the issues? How would you explain that? But you're concerned about affordable housing. If that's one issue, there may be other issues as well. So how would you try to convince, who do you talk to? Do you talk, is there like a gathering of everybody on the Westchester County Board of Legislators? Does the county executive sit in? Do you only speak to the county executive? Do you speak to individuals? I mean, I really have no clue how that works.
Well, it begins,
I mean,
with
I've been
you being
to
on
some meetings, but not that many.
It begins with you being on committees. There's different committees for different different things, like the safety committee, transportation. You know, they have different ones.
Oh.
So then it depends on the committee you're on, but you can also propose somebody to a committee of what, you know, what you want to try and resolve and propose. So then you go from there, and then you first, if you go amongst your party and your other party, you know, co-workers to go forward with it.
Uh-huh.
And then you don't have to have the county executive involved, but it is good to have them on your side. But it's
mm-hmm.
really amongst the legislators. So say a homeless situation. Right now their current solution plan for the homeless is to spend $100 per day on taking a homeless person and put them up in a hotel. We're not helping these people. We got to help them. We got to come up with a plan to get these people back on their feet, mm-hmm. and also help them, you know, go back into society with a job and, you know, with better, you know, if they're being treated the right way with, like, some type of mental illness or, you know, whatever their case may be, we need to help them get back on their way, on their feet, instead of just passing them off and coddling them, putting them in hotel rooms. We have to come up with a constructive plan to help these people.
So we're spending $100 a day to put an individual up in a hotel. Are they displaced? Is that the reason why we do that? Were they homeless?
Yes.
So
we're not helping them.
Is there anyone, is the county even discussing this whole issue? Because $100 a day, that's $3,000 a month. And I'm sure we can get housing for much less than $3,000 a month.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're currently discussing it, but I know that this is their plan, and it's something that if you ask many of them, they just brush it off and they try not to address it, but it is something that needs to be addressed. There's like their mental health crisis, you know, they get in their budget from 2019 to 2020, there's for DSS, there's $650 million for the Department of DSS, but they have no plan for helping anybody with mental health. They come out, they take a report, and then that's it. It just gets passed off. They're not helping these people get treated, you know, getting the right amount of doctors that they should be getting. And this is something that can't happen because they're just wasting funds and letting money in. They're letting people become, you know, mentally ill and, like, become victims to violence and, you know, to themselves.
Right. We don't have much of an outreach effort, especially for people who probably suffered more in the last year and a half because of the pandemic. It's a tremendous amount of mental strain, a lot of violence in the home because of it, lack of being able to earn a living, and the stress of not being able to pay rent even in many cases. So. Is the county focusing in on these issues, or is it still at the moment mostly talk, and we don't have any solution at the moment on the county level, or I don't know, do we even have any example to look at which is shows us the way? I mean, are they doing a better job in the city of New York or out in New Jersey or up in Connecticut or further north up in Dutchess County or who knows where?
No, it's just all talk right now. They, like I said, like they only bring up the issue when something really, like, bad happens, and then some bad, so, like, yeah, we need to find solutions, and then they don't. They just let it go. They pass it off and go to the next subject, and that's something we can no longer allow.
Uh-huh. Cool.
You know,
so
I
that's
know,
like a
I
major
know they
issue.
Want, yeah,
go ahead.
I know there's many areas that have constructive programs to help get these people back on their feet, and that's a program that we need to, you know, follow in their footsteps. We need to have a plan that, you know, that allows these people to have housing. We get them jobs. We check them on the progress report. We give them food. You know, we give them a room, but they're not allowed to have parties or resident, you know, people over. They have social workers on site. We get them medicated.
Mm-hmm.
To help them, you know, get back onto their feet. We can no longer allow them to be mentally ill and going into the streets or be mentally ill and not be, you know, treated the right way. You know, they just become victims eventually.
Well, I remember I asked about that a long time ago, and they said that we have facilities for the homeless. And I said, well, there's so many people still homeless in Yonkers. So I said, do you have any space? No, they're full up. So I said, well, then you're not meeting the need. But there was something I did see on Southern Boulevard in the Bronx. Very interesting. They built a facility. I don't know who funded it, but they built a facility for the homeless. And there are many complexities to the homeless, so they ended up trying to find, well, first to clean them up from a medical perspective and from a health perspective. And many of them used to take medication to keep them in a better state of mind and capacity to function, which they hadn't as a homeless individual. And the federal government ends up really helping to pay for these sort of things because now they have a legal address. But they're basically a single room occupancy, so it doesn't cost a fortune. You can have a lot of places done. And they even find people jobs. And before you can leave, you've got to take your medication. And there's a doctor on the scene and so on and so forth. So there is a way to do it. It's just that I've never heard it expressed in Westchester County. Do you find that that's a comfortable situation to look at?
I do. I'm looking forward to it, to address the issue. I don't think that, we should just coddle these people and, just pass them off into a hotel room. I feel like we owe it to them and we owe it to others to help them, get back on their feet medically and, psychologically, help them, become efficient back into society and help them with their needs. And then, like I said, as a public servant, as a public figure, as an elected official, we should owe it to them, as always, to do what's right by them and address this need.
Uh-huh. Well, it's also right for society if we can get people in a healthier state of mind and healthier state of physical health. So that's interesting. That's all very, very interesting. What else do you think, what else is important for you as an issue that would be pertinent on the Westchester County Board of Legislators that you're running for?
I will also like to make sure that we remain affordable and not raise taxes. I know that's a talking point that everybody goes on, but not everybody delivers on it. There's many different ways that I'd like to try and address it. I'd like to create an inspector general's position to see all oversight of finances in Westchester, to also make sure that we're not overspending or misspending somewhere, and that we can remain low and advocate the money for the right place. Also, I would like to, any developer that comes into Westchester where they're building, if they want a tax break, because that's all they really talk about is tax breaks and they make it difficult, that they have to go by certain agreements. And then one of the agreements is to get a tax break, you have to give at least 8 to 10% of what your building's worth to the municipality. And then from that money, it'll go to the school district or repaving a road or fixing parks, a program for seniors or homeless or people coming out of jail, something that provides opportunities in the community to help to build, build up a community that they're coming in to build and make millions of dollars off of. Because if not, if you don't get that small percentage, then you're going to end up spending more in taxes. So we need to start doing stuff like that to not raise taxes, but to bring in revenue to help us. Because like Yonkers, for instance, we have 44 schools in Yonkers. It's very expensive. So we have developers that come in all the time. We should be able to say, okay, you want a tax break? The only way you get a tax break is if you do this for the community. It'll help go a long way, because then taxpayers won't feel the burden of trying to constantly get hit in the pocket with higher water rates, higher tax rates, higher property taxes. It's just something that we need to be, changing up. Like, we need to look at the old playbook, throw it out, and start to, write our own playbook, because many of these ideas that they've been going on for years are not working anymore. We need to start looking at different solutions.
Okay. Well, that's very encouraging. And how do people greet that concept when they hear that from you, when you go about talking to them?
Well, they like it. They like that, they're not going to keep getting hit in the pocket. Somebody's going to be there and say, no, we're not going to raise taxes. We're going to do this. We're going to look at this option that we have, because it's not their fault that we got to constantly say, well, we can't afford this. We need to raise taxes. It's not their fault. And also, people want to know that, where their tax money is going is being spent the right way. So, we have an inspector general, we could see, why are you spending so much on this when it could be cheaper? Or why are you misspending here? Or where can we condense funds without cutting jobs? Those are things that make people feel comfortable and safe. We need people to stay here in Westchester.
Well, I didn't know that. Does an inspector general have authority to second guess, assuming that that's the way it could be defined, a budget that's being planned? Shouldn't that be the finance department? Or are they I don't know how they're guided, or what their guidance is, what standards they use, or do they feel that the taxpayer can afford to pay whatever they require? But do they validate their budgeting, or they don't? I don't know how it works, to be honest. I never heard that concept. It sounds good. I don't know if, like, for example, we have an inspector general in Yonkers. I don't know if that would be his purview at all. I wonder.
We do.
He's got purview over that?
Yes. Lee McLaughlin, the former city council president, is the inspector general here in Yonkers. We don't have one on the county level.
Yeah, and does he,
the county level,
does he have, but does he have purview over the money? Because he doesn't vote for it.
He doesn't vote for it, but
he
inspects it and stuff like that, and deals that are going in and out, grants, stuff like that, money opportunities, transactions that are going back and forth. We need that on the county level because we have 44 municipalities inside of Westchester County. You know, even Westchester County alone, like, we could look at different opportunities to help, you know, not raise property taxes. Like, why are we spending so much in one part when we can reallocate that to somewhere else? Like, think about it.
Uh-huh.
I think counties spend $6 million in tourism a year. But last year in 2020 with COVID, what tourism was being done? Except everything was virtual.
There wasn't.
Exactly. So if we could have used that $6 million to put in another department that was definitely needed, like social services for people that needed food and stuff like that, essentials.
That's a brilliant deduction and insight. I'd not heard that before, but I realized it, and I always wondered what they did with the money. So they approved it before the pandemic, and have they used it at all? They used it for something else? That's a good question.
That's why we need an inspector general to look at these insights.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Because that should be an extra $6 million if they allocated it. It should never have been spent. Because then it would have been illegally spent. Oh, what a fascinating concept. Very good. Very smart. Very astute. That is brilliant. Okay. Well, and do you think that we can entice affordable housing in Westchester County? There are a lot of communities that are really looking for affordable housing units. And I think there was one in Mount Vernon recently that's being built. I don't know if we have anything like that in Yonkers or in Bronxville. But it doesn't matter. You know, I think many communities are looking into it. In fact, I saw something being promoted further up north in Westchester County that was affordable housing. And anybody, no matter where they live, if they live in Westchester County, could apply. So that's very interesting. And that came, I think, from Westchester County Board of Legislators. Somebody sent out notice of it, which is interesting. Well, cool. Wow, very exciting. What else do you have to do in order to get your name out there so people know the name of James Nolan better? Or maybe they already know it.
Just be visible. You know, maybe people want to interact, especially what we've been through last year. You know, we can't just sit on Zoom calls. We need to, you know, make an effort to go door to door so they know our stance. They know who we are. We know what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be at events. You know, we owe it to them. We, you know, that's what you want. You want to be an elected official. I personally see that you have to work every single day up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then just because when you get elected doesn't mean it's going to stop. You got to work even harder now because you got to live up to it. And that's what I look forward to. But I make it to a point to go. I do a lot of door walking. I'm doing door to door today before I go to work myself. I do it as much as possible. I have a great team that helps me with it. Also, when I can't do it or when I'm doing it, they go to a different area. So they let it be known that, you know what, we're out here. You know, I like meet and greets. I did a meet and greet this past Saturday at Slave to the Grind, who's a very famous coffee place in Westchester. They've been open almost 30 years, and they unfortunately were almost shut down and protested against last year because of my opponent. So this is something that I felt that the community needed, especially getting to know a candidate. And it's not really likely to hear about a meet and greet. So I went, and I went to the coffee shop, and I did a meet and greet there and went very well. We got a lot of good feedback. You know, and all the things about that with the meet and greet is, you know, whenever an elected official or candidate holds an event, it's all them asking for money, money, money. You know, there's going to be more candidates coming out now that provide money back to do good in the community. That's mm-hmm. our goal. And that's what I'm mm-hmm. going to continue to do.
Cool. Do you remember the name of the coffee shop? You know, so people, it's like getting a free advertisement on the radio.
Yeah, Slave to the Grind in Bronxville on Palmfield Road.
Oh, that's a really nice place.
Very nice. They're a
that's
great
a very
place.
Nice
They're very
place.
Busy. Very successful place.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, mm-hmm. you know, they have a lot of cops and nurses and doctors that go in there. You know, they're
yeah.
frontline workers and they deserve it. And, you know, I actually had the opportunity to talk to many of the nurses and the firefighters and the police officers that
uh-huh.
came in there. And they're very appreciative of it.
That's terrific. That is really terrific. So what else do you have to do now as we're coming into the stretch where, well, you don't have a primary, so we know that you're going to be on the ballot no matter what.
No.
Yes. So you've got, well, I guess maybe some things will change. You never know. I don't know if your challenger on the other side of the aisle will have a competitor or not. So at least the two of you will probably be there. I don't know, is there somebody else running on her line or no?
No, not that I know of.
Okay. All right, so then we'll see the two of you at the in the general election then.
Yes.
Okay, well, you know, so you've got a long way to go. Because
yes.
the process is going to be in November, my God. So
yes.
actually, but it's a wonderful moment because then you could really spend more time focusing on issues, formulating ideas and concepts, deducing what you just did when you talked about, you know, affordable housing units. That's really good. It gives you a lot of time.
Definitely, you know. It does, but it will be here
Very
sooner
exciting.
Than we know it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I see we've come to the end of our time slot, which is unbelievable. Everything goes so quickly, it's really amazing. So, but we'll speak again next week at the same time. I look forward to it.
All right, sounds great. Thank you again, Hezzy.
Be well, my pleasure. Oh, give us your website address so people can reach out to you.
Sure, you can reach out at electjamesnolan.com, and then all from there, we have our emails on there, our social media. There's many ways to get in contact with us through our website.
Okay, very good then. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All the best. You too. Bye. Well, there we are, folks. And we'll speak to you tomorrow. And just have a great day. Thank you very much for joining us. Most appreciated. Be well. And let me just, there we are.